Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 21st of February. Tomorrow is George Washington's birthday. He was born in 1732, which means he would have been 281 years old tomorrow. And earlier this week, we celebrated President's Day. So we thought the time was appropriate to talk about one of our favorite subjects, and that's the presidency. And we're delighted to have Professor Lewis Gould with us this hour, Professor Emeritus in the History Department at the University of Texas. He has written so many books about the presidency and various presidents. What's guiding us this hour is the modern American presidency. He's also written, just to give you a sampling here, he's written more than this, Lady Bird Johnson, The Presidency of William McKinley, Reform and Regulation, American Politics, 1900 to 1916, Wyoming, From Territory to Statehood, The Progressive Era, and a book about the presidents. We always like to, and historians are always asked during this week, who are the most effective presidents? He will answer that. He will also talk about the most overappreciated presidents, and we'll take a look at something that's of deep concern to him. He has real reservations about the presidency in the modern era, that has become an aspect of show business rather than policy making. And so do presidents need to skip, you know, the golf tours and all the fundraisers and just tend to the task at hand, which is enormous? Our phone number for you to join this conversation with Professor Gould is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And just a reminder, we're in our winter pledge drive. Think about all of the shows that we've brought you. This is a topic that's of deep interest to many of us. All the shows we've done on various presidents, it's just been so informative. And then we took a trip to Washington, and it was terrific. So keep that in mind as you will hopefully pledge this hour. Our phone number for pledge is 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552. Professor Lewis Gould, thank you so much for being with us. Happy almost George Washington's birthday.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, great to have you here. And we always start with a question of who the most effective presidents would be. And everybody says, almost all historians say that George Washington is among the top three. Do you agree?
Oh, yes, because after all, if he hadn't gotten it started right, then nothing else would have gone correctly for the United States. And that he was the physical presence and the intellectual presence and the political presence that he gave to the early republic in those first two terms, got the nation launched at a time when it was by no means certain that the experiment of the United States of America was going to survive. So just by doing that, and also establishing the precedent that you would only serve two terms, Washington did a huge amount, incalculable amount, to define what the presidency would be.
Has any president ever served just one term and been highly effective?
I think you'd probably have to put James K. Polk in there from 1845 to 1849, who came in determined to get the Oregon Territory, to deal with the issues of surrounding Texas and Mexico, and largely accomplished what he set out to do in one term and then departed and died soon thereafter. Some of the appraisal now of whether it was wise to pursue his agendas, in some ways they may have contributed to the coming of the Civil War, is another question. But for a one-term president who said, I'm going to do these things, and he did it, if you judge by effectiveness, he gets in there.
Let me ask you, do you think that we put too much importance, and historians do, on two terms to be a significant president? And the other question I wanted to ask is, should presidents be allowed to have as many terms as people would vote them in? I know they can't now constitutionally, but is that right?
Well, on the on that question, I would favor repealing the amendment that limits the presidents to two terms. I think the Republicans did that in the 40s and 50s to prevent there from being another Franklin Roosevelt. They ended up preventing there for being another Dwight Eisenhower for a third term or Ronald Reagan for a third term. But I think it's inherently anti-democratic. I mean, it says to the American people, you aren't smart enough to make a decision about whether this chap who's been in two terms should be in a third term. And I think what it does is puts limits on the effectiveness of the president in the second term, which might not be there if there wasn't the sense that he's got only 120 days left or 60 days or 6 months, with a kind of implicit lame duckness about him all the way as the presidency second term goes on. As to the first question, I think that in practical terms, you, in order to be sort of get in past the semifinals into the I'm going to be a great president or not, you got to have a second term. Historians, the American people, observers in general, just assume that if you can't get reelected, you can't have been great. In fact, there, as we just discussed, there aren't many one-term presidents who, you know, were that effective. But it's become almost a kind of benchmark to have to get a second term to be in that elite group where you're regarded as potentially a great president.
Frequently, the list that historians put together also includes, of course, Abraham Lincoln. He would be in my list as well. And FDR. Would you agree with that? Would you add any others?
Well, I would certainly agree on Lincoln and FDR. One sort of basic criteria is that you have to have been a successful war president. And certainly Lincoln, by saving the Union and getting the nation through the trauma of the Civil War and the abolition of slavery, faced probably the greatest test that any president confronted in the 19th century and maybe in all of American history. And then with Franklin Roosevelt, the Depression, the New Deal, four terms, the Second World War, you're also into a category that almost no, well, no other president is in that, can make those claims, so that both of them are effective. I think there may be some FDR revisionism over the horizon.
Really?
But I think Lincoln, except for the diehard pro-Southern Lincoln was a dictator folks, I think most Americans regard Lincoln as even probably slightly greater than Washington because of the Civil War. On FDR, there's some elements of his personality and the way he was as an individual that may in time cause people to look at him in a slightly more jaundiced light. Senator Alvin Barkley said to him once, "Mr. President, you play with men like a cat plays with a mouse."
Oh.
And that aspect of things, as it becomes developed, might cause a slight downtick in his reputation.
I found, and I've been reading the modern American presidency, I know you've written many, many books, but I found this whole idea that you write about it in great detail, that the modern presidency, and tell me when you think this has begun, has become, as you say, an aspect of show business rather than policy making, that maybe the president, instead of playing lots of rounds of golf and going to fundraisers with people all over the country and making sure that this photo op and that photo op takes place, needs to really tend to the business at hand, which, after all, is pretty substantial.
Yes, I was impressed as I thought about it. I've been interested in the idea of celebrity most of my career, and starting with Theodore Roosevelt, who was really the first celebrity president, and you get the coincidence of the presidency evolving at the same time as the mass media evolved. Theodore Roosevelt with newspapers, movies in the 20s, television in the 40s and 50s. And it's been said about television, I think it was by Gore Vidal, who said that television is a barrel that has no bottom, which to some of us has proved every day. But as it has become more and more an aspect of show business, celebrity, a 24-hour or even 24-minute news cycle, the amount of distraction that the presidents have to put up with, not just recreation, I mean, if they want to go play golf, they goodness knows they need a time to rest. But the obsession with the trivial that exists with the presidency seems to me to cut into the time when if we had a society that was engaging our problems in an effective way, then it would be okay. But everybody talks about the dysfunctionality of our political system, and I think the intrusion of the what did Jacqueline Kennedy call it? The grasping paw of the news media.
Mm-hmm.
has something to do with that that should at least be discussed. I wasn't trying to say the last word on the presidency, but to raise these questions and to at least get people thinking about is the way things are the only way they could be, and to ask maybe not.
Professor Lewis Gould is our guest this hour, this day before George Washington's 281st birthday in the week that we celebrate our various presidents. He is a professor emeritus in the history department at the University of Texas, where he has taught for many, many years. He is a historian who's written extensively on the presidency, the presidency of Theodore Roosevelt, William McKinley, the modern American presidency, and the list goes on. We will, in just a moment, talk about the overappreciated presidents and those presidents who are really seeing their stock rise. And one of those, and we'll talk about him, is Ulysses S. Grant. Let's welcome your phone calls momentarily as well. Who would you put on the list of the most effective and the most overappreciated? Our phone number for on-air participation is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. This is also our Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian, and we'd like to ask you to invest 2 minutes of your time to support your future WPR listening.
And when you do, you'll automatically be entered in a drawing for an iPad Mini. Have you seen an iPad Mini?
No. But I have an iPad, and I really like it.
Well, the minis are pretty darn good, too. I have to say that. A contribution of any amount will support the programs you enjoy and get you entered in our drawing for an iPad Mini. So make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have a dollar match right now, Lisa, up to $2,000. It's an extremely generous match from John and Sandra Heyer, and it's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. So what an hour. We're talking about the presidents with a fabulous guest, and you can get your pledge doubled right now. A great opportunity, WPR.org. or 888-202-2552.
We know you're smart, and so we do the best to bring you in-depth, thought-provoking discussions every day. I mean, think about what's going on this hour and talking about these presidents. It's fascinating. And I know you appreciate this conversation and all the ones you hear throughout the year. So make your pledge right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And I love this idea, Lisa. Rather than getting a book or a DVD as a thank you, you can do something different this drive. Give $10 a month or more and select Food for 40 as your thank you gift. We'll pass on what would normally be spent on a book or a DVD to a Wisconsin food bank in your area. Your gift will be enough to feed 40 people.
Wow.
Pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You listen to Wisconsin Public Radio every day. You know how important it is to you. Now consider that you want public radio to be there for the next generation.
You want them to have the same quality news and information, music, entertainment that has nourished you. Your pledge of support today will help us now, and it's a building block for a stable future.
Invest in quality radio for yourself and for the next generation. Make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Remember, pledge any amount today, you'll be entered in a drawing for an iPad Mini. Find out the details and make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Good morning, I'm Kathleen Dunn. Today we're going to talk about a remarkable and true rock and roll story. You can pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. That was just a brief announcement about a great hour that's coming up next hour. You won't want to miss it, I guarantee you. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Lisa Nalbandian is joining me, and we're asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Your gift may be $5, $10, $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
Kathleen mentioned this just a couple minutes ago, but this is an extra special hour because we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from John and Sandra Heyer. So what does that mean? Your gift of $50 would turn into $100. $100 turns into $200.
All right.
$5,000, for example, would turn into $10,000. So take advantage of this match to make sure your gift will go even further in paying for WPR programs. Get your pledge match dollar for dollar right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you've never given before, let me tell you what you can expect. It's a very short process. Takes about 2 minutes. You answer basic questions, your name, address, the amount of your gift, and how you'd like to pay.
And that's it. Make the first donation to WPR and you'll feel good about it. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
There are several ways to make your pledge. Giving on the web is especially efficient. If you're online now, you barely have to stop what you're doing. Go to WPR.org. In a few minutes, you will have made your gift.
Our dollar for match is still in effect up to $2,000. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR will go twice as far. As an added bonus for your pledge of any amount, you'll be entered in a drawing for an iPad mini.
It's a great time to become a sustaining member of WPR by signing up for ongoing monthly installments from your bank account or credit card. You'll automatically be entered in today's drawing for that iPad mini, and you'll also be entered in all of our future sweepstakes and drawings. Become a sustainer now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Suzanne from Green Bay says, Wisconsin Public Radio helps me stay on top of current topics that fuel discussions with friends. And Jamie from Chicago says, I'm just doing my part to keep WPR going. I heart WPR.
Thank you so much, everybody, for your support of WPR. Again, it's 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. And remember that until we reach $2,000, you know, your $50 is $100. Your $100 is $200. Mm-hmm. Plus, we're talking about the U.S. presidents with a terrific guest. Plus, it's the last couple hours for this program to ask for your pledge of support. So I would urge you to do this now. We'll continue. Our phone lines are flooded. I love this. I love the fact that I talk to people who love to talk about the presidents. We'll take your calls in just a moment for our guest, Lewis Gould, who is Professor Emeritus in the History Department at the University of Texas and author of all kinds of books on the modern American presidency and various presidents. Professor Lewis Gould is our guest, and I must tell you, Professor, our lines are jammed, so we're going to start calls with Sam in Madison. Hi, Sam.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, Professor Gould. I'd like to ask Professor Gould about two presidents, which I think were highly overrated and are highly overrated and were not that good of presidents. The first is Republican Ronald Reagan. I think that he's considered one of the greatest presidents, but I think he also started this, or at least pioneered, this crony capitalism nexus between politicians
okay.
and corporations.
All right. And number two?
Who was your second?
And the second is President Bill Clinton.
All right. Professor Gould.
Well, it's certainly bipartisan.
Yes.
I would say that it's interesting on Reagan that it seems to be now the Republican right that's doing the downgrading. I mean, Democrats would be predictable, but there's discussion last year about could Reagan have gotten the Republican nomination? Was he a sort of closet taxer? And, you know, were his policies sufficiently conservative to justify a high rating? And so it's interesting to see a kind of downtick in Reagan's stock from the from his base, and it'll be interesting to follow. On Clinton, well, it just, again, it's a partisan issue. I mean, in some ways, he looks better in the light of the economic difficulties of the last decade or so, yet I doubt he will ever get over the stigma of being impeached,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes impeached by people who are doing some of what he was doing. Hello, Senator Domenici. But in any case, I think the sex aspect of his second term, which illustrates my point about difficult second terms, I think that's going to be something that you'll always have to talk about it in his obituary and in histories about him. So he's never going to escape that.
And yet, when we talked earlier, you did say that Clinton in the 20th century looks a lot better than he did 15 years ago.
Yes, I think because a lot depends on how you're rated as a president by who follows you. if George Bush had sort of George W. Bush had won the war in Iran, had dissed the Taliban in Afghanistan, and had the supply side tax policies had brought prosperity, Clinton would look a lot less good. But with the collapse of the economy and the fiasco in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the job records of Clinton, there's a certain upward bounce that he gets there. So it's you can't control who succeeds you as president, though presidents have tried, but it's often very important who that person is and how they do.
Thank you, Sam, for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655. We have lots of calls coming in, so if you can make your overappreciated and your top three succinctly, that would be appreciated. Victor in Milwaukee. Hi, Victor.
Good morning. A couple of quick points. One is the president's effectiveness balanced by domestic policy versus his foreign policy? And then the other point is sometimes effectiveness could be seen in a negative light. For instance, I go, you know, the former caller said Clinton and Reagan. Now, Clinton pushed forth NAFTA, which on one hand was a counterbalance for the European Union, but look what the damage has caused. Reagan, his first act when he got into office was crushing the ATF, I mean, not ATF, the air traffic controllers when they struck. And that heralded union busting. So it was effective on one hand, but to the detriment of others.
Hmm. Well, I guess effectiveness is in the eye of the beholder, but I think your president we haven't mentioned illustrates your point about foreign and domestic policy, and that's Lyndon Johnson. Because if he were only doing domestic policy for LBJ, he would get very, very high marks on civil rights, probably the most committed civil rights president of the 20th century, with perhaps the exception of Bill Clinton. But you always have to say Vietnam, and that takes his reputation downward, and there's a new book out that suggests that the American performance in Vietnam was even more brutal than some people remembered. So that will be an anchor around Johnson's reputation till the end of time. So every time you think, well, the president is doing well in some area, there may be a counterbalancing area that in the years to come may skew his reputation downward. So you have to look at the whole package, and you need historical perspective, he said with a shameless plug for historians. but after all, it's what I did. To keep that in mind and to understand that rating the presidents is not something that is frozen in time forever, but what makes it fascinating is that it's always changing.
Right.
We're always reappraising.
Yeah, and let's do so with Ulysses S. Grant. You say that we should look for his stock to rise.
Well, Grant was so far down. I mean, he was sort of in the Harding, Buchanan, Pierce area that he had a lot of room to grow up, to go up. And there's in the American Presidency series with the University of Kansas, there's a scholar named Charles Calhoun who's working on Grant. And it turns out in a time when Americans were turning away from civil rights and Civil War and Reconstruction, that Grant was fighting about as hard as he could to keep some of the promises that had been made to African Americans. And if one looks at that and the policies in those areas, he begins to seem to be, A, more competent, more committed to policies that now seem the way the United States should have gone. So while I don't think he's going to ever dislodge FDR or Washington, he's got room to grow and to move up in the roster of presidents. And so that's one of the things that you need to be alert to, that you can't assume that a reputation is, again, as I say, fixed in stone.
Victor, thanks for your call. Fred in Madison. Hi, Fred.
Hi, Kathleen. I love your show today, and I'll be brief. I know that historians now don't like the idea of national character, but I think in a democracy we choose our representatives, we choose our role models, and the people we elect tend to be what we see ourselves ideally as you know, the type. And I would say that Jackson and Reagan are examples of this. I think those two were chosen in a democratic process, and they have defined how we see ourselves and how we are, for better or for worse. So please comment.
We will. Thanks, Fred.
Well, I'm not the world's greatest admirer of Andrew Jackson. He was once described to me as a brooding, inarticulate presence. But he was clearly very popular, and he galvanized the presidency in the 1830s, mostly in a negative way. The Democratic Party in its early days was very much against government power. I know that will seem heresy, but it was in the 19th century. So Jackson did negative things that the people applauded. We've already discussed Reagan to some extent, but I think he illustrates some of my show business thesis. I think he was a star in the Hollywood sense, mm-hmm. in the way he ran the presidency. It was like a movie set to him, and that gave him a great deal of effectiveness, but it also limited some of the issues that he could engage in successfully. But I think your caller's point is right. We do tend to see in the presidency aspects of the national character. That was what was said in the late 19th century, that Ohio, for example, produced men who looked like presidents. And looking like a president is sort of a basic qualification for the job.
Let's talk about, and this may upset some people, I don't know, we'll find out. John Fitzgerald Kennedy, when we talked, you said he was way overrated.
Yes, I think the American people tend to rate JFK very, very high, and I think this year with the 50th anniversary of the assassination, we will see that again come November. There will be endless stories and retrospectives. But if you really, among historians, there's a sort of more balanced view. I mean, it was a short presidency, tragically cut short.
Yes.
But if one looks at, say, something where Kennedy gets high marks, civil rights, there was a book a few years ago that argued, called The Bystander, that actually Kennedy was very slow off the mark as far as civil rights were concerned, and he's nowhere near as effective as Lyndon Johnson was. There's revisionism now about the Cuban Missile Crisis, indicating that Kennedy took the world to the brink in ways that perhaps he didn't really need to do, and that there was as much American bluster as a Soviet threat. I'm not going to pronounce on the merits of that, but that's happening. Also, Kennedy's private life
was pretty wild.
Sordid right. quality of his private life, I think, suggests to historians that he had some strange priorities. So I think as time goes on, the perception of him may come closer to what historians think than the legend of Camelot.
Mm. And yet, isn't there, it says nothing about policy, but when you look at certain presidents, I think the assassination is foremost in our consideration of him being a president who could have been great. But these breakthrough presidents, being the first Irish Catholic, Barack Obama being the first African American, it seems to me as though because of that and because of what that did for groups of people in this country, those people will always have a special place in many of our hearts.
Well, I think that's certainly true about Kennedy, and if you watch his speeches and see him perform in the records of the televised press conferences and things, I mean, he had, and I remember my first vote in 1960, which will tell you how old I am, was for Kennedy in the state of Rhode Island, so I helped put him over the top with 75%. But he was dynamic and articulate, and there was a charisma about him that was there. That's why people went, you know, they had the jumpers in the campaign where people were, you know, jump in the air and scream about Kennedy. And there's no doubt about it. And he would probably put most of today's politicians, perhaps with the exception of President Obama as a speaker. I mean, the contrast would be, it'd be like the difference between say, Derek Jeter and the fellow who's playing shortstop at the local high school. I mean, it just was no contest.
Mm-hmm. We have callers who want to talk about Harry Truman. I'm glad somebody called in about Harry. Yeah, male Harry. And we'll look at, you know, Thomas Jefferson, John Quincy Adams. He's somebody I read this great book about him. We talked about him a few months ago, and I just wonder why I hadn't studied him very much before. What about Woodrow Wilson? Our guest has a lot to say about him, and we'll welcome many more of your phone calls. A couple lines are open for you right now, so call in 800-486-8655. We also have our winter membership drive going on right now. Lisa Nalbandian is joining me, and we need to let you know that listeners like you are really an important part of making all of these conversations possible.
Your support right now makes a big difference and gets you entered in today's drawing for an iPad mini. So make your gift of any amount right now and get entered in the drawing for an iPad mini at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And as Lisa has reminded you, we also have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,000. It is still in effect right now. It's a great time to pledge because for every dollar you give, John and Sandra Heyer will donate an additional dollar. It's their way of encouraging you to support WPR. Double the impact of your pledge right now by giving at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Think about all the issues you've heard discussed on the Ideas Network just in this past year. There are so many. And all those conversations were possible because of listener support. Make your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Do it for all you've learned in the past year on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Oh, have we ever learned a lot in the past year, Lisa? It's amazing. And we think that this is a wonderful idea, too. You can do two good things at once. Make a $120 donation to Wisconsin Public Radio, which is, as you know, $10 a month, and choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift. Your thank you gift will be in the form of 40 meals for those who are facing hunger. And we'll do it through a Wisconsin food bank. It's in your area. So do those two good things at once right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Right, Wisconsin Public Radio keeps you informed and entertained every day. You get value from this program and also from the Joy Cardine Show, Car Talk, Says You, and so many others that you've come to rely on each and every day.
Support the exciting mix of shows you enjoy on this station with your contribution at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552. And everyone who pledges today will be entered in a drawing for an iPad mini. You could be the lucky winner. Have I caught you yet? You could be the lucky winner. When you make a pledge of any amount, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And you do not have to pledge to participate in the iPad mini drawing. You can send a postcard with your name, address, email and phone number to WPR iPad Mini Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Enter by sending a postcard or making a pledge right now at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio because it's one of the best mixes that I can find of both highly entertaining and highly useful and informative information. Wisconsin Public Radio really has a great variety in the type of programs they put on. It's very difficult to get bored of listening to WPR. I only used to listen to public radio in the car. I've recently started listening to public radio on online streaming. The variety and quality of the broadcasts are really enough to keep someone, you know, tuning back in for more time and time again. I'm Ben Martin from Minnesota, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for variety and entertainment.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge of support. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian asking for your support of WPR. We thank you in advance for your gift of $5, $10, $30 a month or whatever amount is right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from John and Sandra Heyer. Your gift of $50 turns into $100. $100 turns into $200 and so on. So take advantage of this match to make your gift go even further in paying for WPR programs. Get your pledge matched dollar for dollar right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have a sustainer program and have noticed that members who made the switch to providing a steady, reliable stream of financial support to WPR is terrific. It comes with benefits both for you and for Wisconsin Public Radio.
Well, for one, we can focus more of our resources on programming, and you don't have to remember to renew your membership each and every year because it automatically rolls over.
Sustaining members are changing the way that public radio works, changing it for the better. Go to WPR.org, 888-202-2552 with your gift of whatever amount you choose.
A gift to WPR is a gift through Wisconsin Public Radio into the community. You enjoy this radio station, and so do many others who can't afford to support it.
Make your pledge right now for yourself, for the community, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Our dollar-for-dollar match is still in effect. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and support your Wisconsin Public Radio.
Because as Suzanne from Green Bay says, it helps me stay on top of current topics that fuels discussions with friends. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
It sure is.
Thank you, Lisa. Again, it's 888-202-2552. Our guest this hour is a presidential historian, prolific author of The Modern American Presidency, and he's written about a number of other presidents and also about Wyoming and Lady Bird Johnson and the Progressive Era. I'd like to have him back. I don't know if Rhonda's listening to me. Let's have him back to talk about the progressives, because we have a long history of that in Wisconsin. It would be a good show. Professor Lewis Gould is our guest, Professor Emeritus in the History Department at the University of Texas. Let's go back to phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. Pat in Stevens Point is next. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm wondering why we hear so little about Harry Truman. He seems to be really ignored or underestimated.
Well, if you're David McCullough selling several million copies of your biography of Harry Truman, he's not neglected. But he has somewhat faded. The problem that you have is that when you change centuries, people tend to forget the previous presidents of long ago, and there aren't many people alive who were, you know, knew that era of Harry Truman firsthand. But he's an important president. The Cold War, civil rights, the era of Wisconsin's own Joe McCarthy, all that is part of the legacy of Harry Truman. And he is regarded as sort of a near-great president. The problems that he had with the scandals in the administration in the second term, there's that second term again, have tended to put him just a few notches down from the truly great presidents. But studying Harry Truman would be something that would repay study, because he was a very interesting, average kind of man who rose to above himself to give a tremendously good performance as president. Mm.
And a fairly humble man, too, in many ways, wasn't he, or am I wrong?
No, you were correct. I mean, he wasn't pretentious. In some ways, he made a lack of pretense an asset. But he regarded himself as an average American from Missouri who had built a political career and then stepped into the office. And later on, in the success that he had, what Dean Acheson referred to, a touch of Harry in the night, on the issues of, say, the Korean War and the Marshall Plan, and the way he pioneered on civil rights even before Lyndon Johnson and John Kennedy, these have all stood him in good stead. And from a very low point when he left office, he is now, as your caller indicates, a president who is very highly regarded.
Thanks, Pat. Gordon in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Boy, great program. I really enjoy listening to this guy explain the presidents. My three would be George Washington, Abe Lincoln, and Ronald Reagan. I think Reagan was a fantastic president. But sometimes I think we almost give these presidents an unfair, it's almost unfair, because they have Congress they have to work with, and some of their legacy is based on what Congress can help them do.
Oh, that's an interesting point. Is that part of the legacy, Professor Gould?
Yes. We do have three branches of the government, and people somewhat assume that presidents can just say, call up Capitol Hill and say, Speaker Boehner or Majority Leader Reid, I want this, and if you don't give it to me by Monday, I'll pitch a hissy fit. When in fact, as we've seen over the last decade, some people love divided government, but it has its downside as we approach a sequester. So the ability to work with Congress, which not all presidents have, some have said, I have a Congress on my hands. And Grover Cleveland once was awakened by his wife, who said, there are robbers in the House. And Cleveland said, no, my dear, all the robbers are in the Senate. that sentiment of the president and Congress battling over foreign policy, thank you, Senator Hagel, is something that's run all through American history. And so presidents sometimes seem to have great, almost limitless power. But if you talk to most of them afterwards, they'll say, it was the limitations that I had on the office that most impressed me, the things that were hard to do because I had to cover all these interest groups and parts of the government.
Mm. Thanks, Gordon, for the call. Let's go back to some of the earlier presidents, and Harry has a comment from Madison. Hi, Harry.
Hi, thank you. My opinion is that James Madison was a very important president. He was one of the richest presidents, and I think he got was one of the most well-educated presidents. I think he played a great role in getting the Constitution ratified by writing those Federalist Papers.
Well, that's certainly true. I think the dilemma of Madison is that he was terrific at the Constitutional Convention. As you say, the Federalist Papers were decisive in getting the ratification of the Constitution. Alas, when it came time to be president, and with the War of 1812 and other things, Madison wasn't as good an executive as he was a framer of the Constitution. You would be hard put to make Madison's two terms as successful as he would have wanted them to be. He had problems with Congress. We lucked out of the War of 1812 in the sense that we ended up no worse than when we started with the Treaty of Ghent and all that in 1814. I think Madison's reputation is going to rest on what he did before he was president.
John Adams.
John Adams, having to follow George Washington was tough, and being between George Washington and Thomas Jefferson was even tougher. Adams was a terrific diplomat. He wrote great letters. He had a wonderful marriage. He was not a good president. He had problems with Alexander Hamilton. He had problems with the party spirit of the time and being undermined by the Jeffersonian Republicans. But some people, and his son John Quincy had some of the same difficulties, some people have the temperament to be president. Alas, when they were passing that out at birth, John Adams must have been somewhere else. He just didn't have it.
John Quincy Adams was a very interesting man, though, wasn't he?
Yes, and there are many wonderful biographies of John Quincy Adams. Perhaps the best is the two-volume by a man I studied with at Yale many, many years ago, Samuel F. Bemis. But John Quincy Adams, his problem started out in the way he became president. He was up against Andrew Jackson and Henry Clay when the election went to the House of Representatives. He and Henry Clay came to an understanding that Henry Clay would be Secretary of State. Andrew Jackson said it was a corrupt bargain, a sordid political deal, and Adams never got off that stigma from the start, and he was very activist. He wanted the government to build internal improvements, as they called them in those days, and to improve the quality of life for the American people by using the power of the government. Andrew Jackson and the Democrats in those days, as I mentioned before, thought that was wrong, that was not what the government should do. And so Adams, one term, just went reeling from political problem to political problem, and he was swept out of office by Andrew Jackson in 1828.
I think common thought is that Woodrow Wilson was one of our better presidents, and yet you would put him in the category of overappreciated.
Well, the interesting thing about Woodrow Wilson, I talk about in the Modern American Presidency, second edition, which is available at the University Press of Kansas, operators are standing by, the problem with Wilson is he has undergone perhaps the most precipitous decline in reputation of any president in the last decade.
Mm.
He has literally fallen, this is not reflected in the polls, but in the public perception and on blogs. He has fallen off the table as far as reputation is concerned, in part because he has been stigmatized correctly for his regressive racial views. He helped to reinstitute segregation in the federal government. He said of the birth of the nation that it was history written with lightning, and he was very unsympathetic to black rights during his two terms. The only thing you can add about that is that there was almost no other serious American politician who didn't share almost exactly the same views. America was a very racist society between 1913 and 1921 and beyond. But under Wilson's time, the idea that there was some other liberal alternative out there who would have said, let's have Brown v. Board of Education, is flapdoodleist, to quote a book review. It just wasn't the case. But Wilson, he was in office. He believed these things. He gets hammered. The other, there's a silly book that's called him a fascist. We'll leave that aside. But also, there's the perception that in the case of World War One, there was no difference really between the Allies and the Germans, and that Wilson framed a harsh peace that led to Hitler and so forth and so on. I think this is way off base. I think the Germany of the First World War had many of the, beyond the Holocaust, but in many of the economic and policies toward Belgium and Russia and stuff, was no more Mr. Nice Guy, let's put it that way.
Right.
So that I think Wilson is sometimes stigmatized or criticized for things that over which he had no control. But all that said in his favor, including the Federal Reserve Act, after you say all that, people have curdled on Wilson, and it, even with great biographies like John Cooper of the University of Wisconsin, who did the best biography of Woodrow Wilson, even with that, getting Wilson back up into great or near great status is going to take a lot of heavy lifting over the next 10 or 15 years.
Mm. Well, Professor Gould, it has been a complete privilege to be in your classroom. You are just wonderful. Please join us again. I don't care whatever you want to talk about.
I'm available. You know where I am. I'll be glad to do it. And I've
Thank
had a good
you.
Time. These have been good questions.
Yes, we have a great audience, don't we? They're just wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Professor Lewis Gould, our guest, professor emeritus in the history department at the University of Texas, author of, I don't have time to list all his books, but the one that I've been reading is The Modern American Presidency. He's written about Lady Bird Johnson, Theodore Roosevelt, William McKinley, the progressives, you name it. We'll have him back. He's great, isn't he? We need 18 more calls. This hour of all hours, this is the substance of what we do. We do a lot of history and presidents and policy and campaigns and elections on this program. So let's get our 18 calls and make our goal, okay? We'll tell you how to do that in just one moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. Lisa Nalbandian is here, and we would like to ask you to invest 2 minutes of time to support your future WPR listening.
And when you do, you'll be automatically entered in a drawing for an iPad mini.
Yeah.
A contribution of any amount will support the programs you enjoy and get you entered in a drawing for an iPad mini. So make your gift right now, right now, right now at WPR.org 888-202-2552.
And we do want to thank, Lisa, everyone who helped us meet the generous match we had earlier this hour. We're still looking, and let's do this hour. It's a good statement about you to pledge for this hour. 18 more callers during the next few minutes of this program. Be the next person to help us along with your gift, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've been enjoying presidential trivia this hour. Now take a few minutes to make this hour and so many more hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We got to bring this guy back, so pledge to bring this guy back, right? Giving to WPR is pretty easy. Takes a few minutes of your time, a gift of any amount, say $10 a month.
The guest this hour was spectacular. He was conversational. He was fun, and he knew everything, it seemed.
He didn't know a lot.
So, you know, make your donation for this hour. Contribute at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Please give as generously as you can.
You can listen to WPR every day for years, and you'll never get a bill. We don't count how many minutes you listen. We don't put a meter on your radio.
Instead, we use the honor system. We count on you to voluntarily make a pledge to pay for the listening you do every day.
And remember, you decide how much WPR is worth to you. It's a dollar a day or maybe a dollar a week. You decide. And then go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Pledge any amount today, and you'll be entered in a drawing for an iPad mini. Find out the details and make your pledge all at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You may want to choose the Food for 40 as a thank you gift. How many pledges do we need, Lisa?
We need 17 more pledges in just the next couple of minutes. So now is the time. 888-202-2552.
And thank you, Lisa, so much. And remember Food for 40, remember the iPad mini, and remember it's George Washington's birthday tomorrow. Have a party. That's what we're going to do. Have a party. Thank you, Lisa Nalbandi. And thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and to Katie Madsen for on-air production in our studios in Milwaukee.